Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio, your one stop for creative inspiration. We have a terrific hour of ideas and tips for you today, so let's get to it. Here's your host, Pat Sloan.
Hi, and welcome to this special editor's edition of the American Patchwork and Quilting Podcast. Pat's let us take over for the week, so we're going to talk a little bit about some reader questions that we've gotten recently. We're also going to talk about the latest issue of Quilts and More, and Jody Sanders is joining me for this podcast. Hi, Jody.
Hi, thanks for inviting me. This is always fun to be able to come out and talk with folks about reader questions that we have, kind of give us a chance to give some feedback to folks, and also be able to talk about the latest issue of Quilts and More, which I'm really excited about.
So I'm Linda Augsburg, the executive editor of American Patchwork and Quilting and Quilts and More. And we were just looking through Facebook and some letters that we get on a regular basis from readers about kind of what the challenges are. And one of the challenges that it seems readers sometimes face is what to do with those large-scale prints. And if anybody can be pinpointed as being responsible or in this boat, that's me. I love large-scale prints. I love playing with them. I love buying them, but I do have a hard time cutting them up into small pieces. And while I've seen some beautiful quilts that cut large prints up into small pieces, it just breaks my heart because I fell in love with the large print. So Jody and I were talking about some possibilities of what to do with those large prints.
Yeah, I too love the big, bold prints. In addition to the other things that I like, I do love a big, bold floral or particular maybe paisley. But like you said, sometimes it's so hard to cut those up because what drew you in initially, maybe it was the color, but it probably was the design and the motif. And that's what you loved about it. And so cutting it up, then you lose all of that.
Right.
So how do you continue to enjoy that big design in a quilt or in a project? And I guess a couple of ideas that I have is if you're making a quilt and you do happen to cut it up into smaller pieces, what about using it as the backing? You know, I know that's maybe not the most exciting thing, but gosh, it's sometimes so pretty to see a backing that's been artfully made, either pieced or if it's just a big, fantastic print, that's a great place to put it, is on the backing.
Well, and if you love the colors in the print, you can always pull those colors out for the front of the quilt, and then that backing really beautifully coordinates, but you've still got the look on the front of those colors that drew your attention.
Another thing I wondered about is how about if you made pillowcases or pillow shams and used, again, you're showcasing that big, bold print in a bigger way by not cutting it up, by using it either as a sham or a pillowcase. We have some great designs on our website for pillowcases, and you could either just make a plain pillowcase or you can make one where either the band or the body itself was showcased. But I think pillowcases or shams would be another great option for a large-scale print.
Well, and I love a large block design. So something that really does let me keep those prints at a, you know, 8-inch, 10-inch square where there's piecing around it. I think really that way it's the centerpiece.
And finally, another way to use it, a great way, would be also in the binding, because you'd get such a unique, colorful binding that would change as it went around the quilt. And so that's another option, is once you've made the quilt, if you still have some of the pieces left, obviously you're cutting it in a little smaller piece then, so you're losing some of that, but you still get all the colors and it would coordinate beautifully with the other fabrics that you chose for the front of the quilt.
Well, and I know a lot of quilters also use it as their borders. They'll use that bold print as the border and then pull colors out for the piecing.
Right. Sometimes that's the starting point for them, mm-hmm. is using that, and that's their focus fabric, and then pull fabrics from that.
Another question that some of our readers have is about tips. They're looking for tips for working with flannel and plush. And now that we're heading into that kind of that fall, wintry season where flannels are a little more prevalent in, I think, quilts. And, of course, I always love plush, especially for baby projects and kid projects. But I know we have some great tips for both of those things.
Well, one thing, we're going to talk a little bit later about Quilts and More in the winter issue. And the quilt that's on the cover of that issue is a quilt that's made with a combination combination of cotton and flannel. And one of the tips that we do give you is to make sure that you pre-wash your fabrics before you put them in the quilt or cut them up, because flannel and cotton will shrink at different rates, and you don't want to get your quilt together, have it quilted, then put it in a washing machine and dryer and have it kind of get a puckery look that you're not necessarily looking for. I mean, sometimes you want that look, but in this case, I don't think you want that puckered look, and your flannel and your cotton are going to shrink at different rates. So I'm not necessarily always a pre-washer, but in this case, definitely I would recommend pre-washing all of your fabrics before you use them.
I agree. I've seen that look, and I've experienced that problem. So it's always important, and I'm not a pre-washer either, but I think for this kind of a quilt, it's so important.
And, you know, plush fabric kind of has its own unique set of circumstances, I think, when working with it. And we've got several fabric manufacturers that are producing that fabric now, and I think it's becoming more and more popular, and not just for items, but also for garments and for other things that you might wear, things like slippers or scarves or things like that. So I think that taking a look at maybe having some specific set of guidelines for working with plush will help people when dealing with that kind of fabric. And we will talk a little bit about those projects when we talk about quilts and more winter issue. But I think maybe right now we could talk about a few of those things that you could do as well.
Well, and I know a lot of quilters aren't necessarily, you know, haven't always been garment sewers or anything. So they don't know one of the things that's really important with plush, which is nap. So because plush fabric has a nap, much like velvet, if you run your hand one direction on it and then the other, you'll see that you get almost a different color look to the fibers. And you just want to make sure that when you're working with it, all your pieces are cut and also put into the item, whatever it is, in the same, so the nap's going in the same direction.
Right. So when you're putting your pattern pieces on the fabric itself, you want to be looking at what direction that nap is running. I know we ran a pattern a year or two ago for some mittens that were made out of plush. And that was the thing that we wanted to make sure that readers recognized as well, that when you put those mittens on, you know, which way was that nap running with the plush fabric? So recognizing what nap is and that you need to pay attention to that is really important.
Well, and the other thing about plush is that, of course, when you're cutting into it, because it's not a woven fabric per se, it's more of a knit fabric, it does shed when you cut through it.
And also has a stretch. So
yes,
you need to be cognizant of that as well. But when you talk about the shedding, invariably when I'm working with plush, I have black pants on.
Absolutely.
It just never seems to fail when I'm working with a light plush, black pants, and it is everywhere. It is a mess. So recognize that as well, that you're going to want to maybe change your clothes or just have that lint roller close by so that you can get your pants or your clothes cleaned up before you go outdoors, because it'll definitely be a telltale sign if you've been cutting with that and then you leave the house and don't check yourself out before you do.
My big trick with that is that I'll have a satin night robe, you know, really just a robe in the sewing room, so that if I'm working with plush, I can just slip that on over and then all those fibers just drop to the floor.
That's
so
perfect. That's a great tip.
Yep.
The other thing that you want to look for is an even feed foot. If you have one of those that you can put on your sewing machine when you actually get to the sewing part. I think also pinning is so important, because there is so much stretch in, or there can be, depending on which way you're sewing it or you have your pieces, that pinning is really important. Because I know I was working on a project one time, and honestly, I'm not a pinner by normally. I do a lot of small things, and so I don't pin a lot. And I just, even when I work on bigger things, I don't pin. I'm just not a pinner. But I made the mistake of not, when I was working with some plush, pinning, and I ended up with one side way bigger than the other. And so I would really encourage you, if you're not a pinner, that if you're working with plush fabric or knit fabrics, to make sure that you do pin. It'll save you some grief in the end.
And then also, of course, we want to make sure you use the right needle. So you, for knits, because it is a knit, you'll want to use a 90-14 ballpoint stretch needle. And then maybe even a longer than normal stitch, so a 3.0 or a 3.5 millimeter. And even there is a stitch that's just a real mild, almost a very mild zigzag, and that's also great for knits.
Oh, I've never tried that. That's a great tip.
Yeah, but it just gives them a little more give when they're going to stretch so those stitches don't pop.
And I think having the larger stitch length, again, that's really a good tip, too, because when you unsewing like I had to do because I didn't pin, if you're using your normal stitch length, that's kind of difficult to do some seam ripping or unsewing, as we sometimes call it, when you're working with those knits. So using just a little bigger stitch length will really help.
Well, and those stitches tend to sink into the fiber of the knit fabric. And then, of course, when you're pressing, you're not really going to press with an iron on plush. It is a poly, mostly poly plush, so you want to make sure that you don't hit it with the heat of an iron and, you know, have any of those fibers melt any.
Yeah, because most of the things that you're making, whether it's a pillow or a scarf or some mittens or whatever it might be, don't really need those hard creases of when we're typically pressing something. You want a very stark and hard edge on something. But with the plush, part of the thing that you love about it is that it does stick up and it isn't a hard defined edge. There's a little bit of roundness to it, and that's part of the appeal to it, I think. So, yeah, definitely you want to be careful with using an iron with your plush fabric.
So we'll be back in a few more minutes with a few more questions from our readers and a little more information about the next issue of Quilts and More. Stay tuned.
Boost your sewing skills from start to finish with daily tips from the editors of American Patchwork and Quilting. Visit tips.allpeoplequilt.com for inspiration. Like American Patchwork and Quilting on Facebook for daily quilting inspiration, tips, and giveaways. Find us at facebook.com/APQ magazine. See our editors share their tips, ideas, and techniques by visiting allpeoplequilt.com and clicking on videos.
Here's a special offer just for radio listeners. Get 2 full years of American Patchwork and Quilting delivered right to your door for less than half the cost on the newsstand. You won't miss an issue that's packed with never-before-seen projects from top designers, complete materials lists for all projects, and easy-to-use pull-out patterns and quilting diagrams. Subscribe today online, and you'll also get a free downloadable pattern. Check it out. Go to allpeoplequilt.com.
Follow American Patchwork and Quilting on Pinterest to find ideas for bags, baby projects, pillowcases, storage and organization, and more. Visit Pinterest.com/APQ magazine to join the fun.
So this is Linda Augsburg, and I'm back with Jody Sanders, and we're going to talk a little bit more about some of the reader questions. And one of the questions we get very often is, how do you finish your quilt? And of course, that can encompass so many things, from how do you bind your quilt? How do you add a little detail when you bind? How do you quilt your quilt, or do you quilt your quilts? So I think we're just going to touch a little bit on that today and see what kind of information we can both share. So I'm going to make a true confession. When I first learned to quilt, and this was 20-something years ago, I didn't know you could make your own binding to match, or didn't know that that was the way that people, you know, did it. So my first quilt was bound with pre-packaged bias binding that that you buy in the packages at the store. And, you know, I look back at that now and I think, oh, you know, it's fine. It's a fine way to finish your quilt. But by gosh, when I do a matching binding or a fabric that's in the quilt as the binding, it's just so much of a better finish. So I'm really glad I learned along the way.
Well, I have to make a true confession. I also used that 20, 25 years ago when I first started quilting. And so I'm not sure. Maybe they didn't tell us to make the binding back then like they do now. But I think that's something that is fairly typical for new quilters to, you see it in the store and you know it's already made and it's nice and easy and you don't have to think about it and you don't have to look, figure out the math of how much you need. And so I think you're not alone in using that in one of your first projects.
Well, and I know that I think making bias binding intimidated me at the time. So, and I didn't know straight of grain binding could be used, but now I understand, of course, after, you know, 20 something years of quilting,
yeah,
that, just depending on the quilt itself, that's what kind of dictates what your binding can be.
Well, and how about if we back up just a little bit and talk about, before we get to the binding part, and then we'll wrap up maybe with more
Perfect.
Options for binding. But I think for some people, even before the binding, the stumbling block is, how do I have pieced my top. Now what?
Right.
And I'm guilty of that in a lot of ways because that's the part I enjoy. I love piecing. I make small quilts now because I started making big quilts when I first started. And I hand quilted a big queen size quilt, and it took me 10 years to get it hand quilted. And I decided I couldn't put that much time into every quilt that I was making, and so I needed to find a different way to finish my quilts. And that might be machine quilting, it might be tying. There are lots of different ways to finish, but maybe you can talk a little bit about some of your favorite ways to finish a quilt.
Well, and I've done all of those things, just like you said. I have quilts that I tie. I've quilted on my regular domestic machine, and then a couple of years ago, I actually got a long arm, so I'm able to, still making friends with it, still getting comfortable with it, but I do enjoy being able to quilt that quilt with the long arm and being able to, it's easier to manage for me, but it's not always the solution. You know, I'm not probably going to do a mini quilt on there, so I still have to be able to quilt on my domestic machine as well.
And I think it depends on the occasion that you're making the quilt for and how it's going to be used, the expectation. If you're making a quilt for a baby or a child and you know it's probably going to be laundered a lot, you want them to use it. It's not a keepsake. It's something you want them to love and use and drag around. And, you know it's going to get laundered a lot. I think tying a quilt is a great option for that, because it doesn't take as much time. You probably, unless you enjoy hand quilting and that's something that you want to do,
right,
it's probably not the technique that you would use to finish a baby quilt just because of the time and effort it takes to do that. I think tying is a great option for something like that, or something, a quilt that's maybe going to be used at college and you know it's, again, something that'll be laundered a lot, or maybe not laundered very much, but just used to keep those three layers together. And I think tying is a great option. And I know for some people, they say, well, when you tie it, what do you use? You know,
right.
I think we're all used to seeing those pieces of red yarn
yes.
that were used to tie a lot of quilts. And that certainly could be used. But I know now a lot of people use pearl cotton. And they
nice
come
way,
in
five.
A beautiful array of colors. So as Linda mentioned, it can be like a three or a five. Pearl cotton makes a great option for tying quilts. There's also some crochet thread, I think, that I know that people have used. And depending on the thickness of that, you might want to use one or two strands as you're tying. But getting a large eye needle with a sharp point definitely is something you want to do, too, so that you're not having a blunt needle
right.
that you're trying to stick through all those layers. So there are large eye needles that have very sharp points, and that's what you're going to want to look for if you want to tie a quilt.
Yes, and you're also going to want to make sure that you either pin or baste it very, very well, or that you're tying it on a very flat surface so that you've got a table you can lay the whole quilt on so there's no weight on it. You want to make sure those layers stay lined up so that you don't have puckers on the front or the back.
And I think that's a chore that I, at least for me, it's a chore, is the whole basting process. Whether you're pin basting with safety pins or you're thread basting with long strands of thread, that to me is such a laborious process. And if I'm down on the floor trying to do it, you know, that,
it's hard to
that
get up from that.
Just keeps me from finishing some things in some ways, because I just have to, that's just part of the process. You know, that's just part of getting that beautiful top that you've made done. So
yes.
It's not always fun. And, you know, they've come up with things, I think, in the last few years to try and make the process easier. You know, we've got the curved safety pins now that kind of make that process
make
a little
huge
easier.
Different.
And so, you know, those kinds of things, I think, help too, and those innovations help.
Yep. And that's also, I think you and I both hit on the same idea, which is that sometimes quilters love the process of making the top, but they don't always love the quilting process. And I think that's why a lot of tops languish in closets and boxes and that type of thing. What I've found is also, you know, there are people who will quilt it for you. There are people who will hand quilt for you. There are people who will machine quilt for you. There are folks out there who can help you out What I do know at this time of year, of course, is that if you wanted to get something long arm quilted by a quilter, you know, this is their busiest time of the year. So you really do have to get on their calendar pretty early in order to get that project done by the holidays, if in fact you want it as a gift. So cut your long arm quilter a break and give her plenty of notice. Get on her calendar if that's the route you want to take. But, you know, even then, your quilting doesn't have to be super intricate or really difficult, you know, really high-end, especially with some of those quilts that are going to be more utilitarian, you know. You just want something that the kids can cover up on with on the couch or, like you said, going off to college. You want to make sure that it's quilted and the layers are going to hold together and the batting's not going to ball on you. But by and large, it doesn't have to be a masterpiece every time.
One of the things that I think people really like in our magazines is, you know, you often see when it gets to the part about finishing the quilt that we, you know, often say quilt as desired. And that, you know, what does that mean? I mean, that means so many different things. But one of the things that we do in American Patchwork and Quilting is to include those quilting diagrams. And our illustrator, Chris Nybauer, does an amazing job of replicating the designs that the machine quilters do on the quilts. And I think that that's really beneficial to the reader to be able to see, because sometimes even in the photographs, we can't necessarily get up close enough or have the space to really show that machine quilting. And I think showing those illustrations of how the machine quilting is done is really, really beneficial and gives people an idea of what to do next.
Right. Well, and I do love, we do try in those photos to make sure that you can see the quilting, because again, it really does, you know, sometimes you're stumped as to how am I going to quilt this, and to be able to see how someone else did it at least might inspire you for this project or for another one. I could try that next time. And that's a huge benefit. I find that's one of the things I have been collecting in my head and on Pinterest and those types of things. What type of quilting designs are being done on various quilts so that I can go there for inspiration later?
Another thing that I've noticed people are doing a lot of lately, and we haven't really touched on, is also the big stitch.
Yes.
And that's something that's kind of a combination between hand quilting and tying, in terms of, you know, you're making these big stitches by hand, but they're also decorative in some ways. You know,
right.
They're not just in the ditch. They're actually a design element and part of the finished product. And people are using beautiful threads and pearl cottons to do that. And we're seeing a lot more of that. And I think, again, it's kind of that slowing down, enjoying the process thing. So that's another option for finishing your quilt as well.
Well, and you can add that, too, as an accent. So I have a quilt that I did that I, you know, just stitched in the ditch along the block lines. But then I went in, I wanted to add a curve to it. Was an off-center log cabin. So it already had kind of a natural curve. And I wanted to emphasize that. So I just did a big stitch along that, which made it stand out a little more. And yet I didn't have to do that everywhere. So it went a little faster.
And what a terrific way to mix and match those techniques. I think, again, that's a great thing now that people can add that individuality. You don't have to have just machine or just hand piecing. You can mix and match those techniques in the same quilt and it looks terrific.
Yeah. So a little bit about binding. So Jody, when do you use bias binding and when do you use straight of grain binding?
Well, I have to say, I don't like cutting bias binding just because I'm lazy, probably. It's just easier to cut straight of grain binding. But I think certainly sometimes for a design element, a bias binding is particularly beautiful. Or if you've got curves, if you have anything that's not a straight angle, you really do need to do bias, whether it's maybe a grandmother's flower garden where you've got a lot of miters, or it's a double wedding ring where you've got a curve. Those really do have to have bias bindings on them. Otherwise, your binding is not going to go around that curve, right?
Right. Those scalloped edged quilts that are so beautiful. And especially, I think we saw a lot of that in vintage quilts.
Right.
With that curved edge. There is also the option. I know striped bindings are just so huge right now. And I know sometimes those are cut on the bias, but I think a lot of the fabric designers have gotten, you know, kind of taken to that tip and said, hey, why don't we just print diagonal stripes on the fabric, and then they can get the look of diagonal stripe binding without having to cut it on the bias. They can still cut straight of grain, which makes it so much easier and still has that huge impact.
And it's such a great design element to finish your quilt. We've got a quilt coming up, and one of the issues of Quilts and More, that's all solids, but the binding on it is a black and white stripe, and it just frames the quilt beautifully. You know, you wouldn't have think of that, but it's just really a great design element to add as your final touch to your quilt.
Yep. All right. Well, thanks so much, Jody, for talking with me about finishing your quilt and doing a little binding. Next up, we're going to talk more with Jody about Quilts and More Winter 2015. So stay tuned.
Choose from more than 100 of your favorite patterns from American Patchwork and Quilting, Quilts and More, and Quilt Sampler, all available online. Buy downloadable patterns today at apqshop.com.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. Once you've determined the block placement in a quilt, take a picture of the layout with your phone or digital camera. Look at the picture to make sure you still love the layout, as having a different perspective can sometimes make you see things you haven't before. Once your layout is final, refer to the image as you sew to ensure the blocks remain in their desired positions.
Hi, I'm Linda Augsburg. Join me in 2015 for a brand new video series called Show Me How, brought to you by Baby Lock. Each month, I'll show you how to complete a simple project from start to finish. Learn new techniques, see tips, and sew a great project. Visit allpeoplequilt.com/videos to watch.
See what other quilters are up to on the American Patchwork and Quilting page on Facebook. Simply go to facebook.com and search for APQ Magazine.
Hi, and welcome back to the American Patchwork and Quilting podcast, sponsored by Moda Fabrics. Jody and I have been talking about reader questions, but we're going to switch gears a little bit, and we're going to talk about the winter 2015 issue of Quilts and More, which goes on sale officially tomorrow.
You know, we're noticing here in the Midwest that the days are getting shorter and leaves are starting to turn. The temperatures are getting a little cooler. Maybe need a jacket in the evening. And that kind of gets me to thinking about the holidays and handmade gifts and kind of settling in. Maybe in the summertime you've been more outside doing outside activities. And now once it gets a little chilly, or at least where we live, we tend to start thinking about moving inside and maybe doing some of those handcrafted things. So I'm really excited to be able to talk about the winter 2015 issue of Quilts and More for a little bit here, because we've got some terrific ideas for some handmade items, either for yourself or for gift giving.
Absolutely.
Let me tell you a little bit about the cover so you know what issue that you're looking for. The main image is of a star quilt, and it's a five-pointed star. The colors are red and black and gray, and it's a quilt designed by Tonya Alexander. And the thing that I love about this is that she combined flannels and cottons in this quilt. And it's such a great combination. It makes it super cozy. You just want to cuddle up with it. I think it makes it a really neat guy quilt,
absolutely,
which sometimes are hard to find. And so I think it could be used, obviously, for any age and any gender. But I think specifically, it kind of, to me, reads a little bit like a guy quilt. I also think the design's really versatile, because switch out maybe the black and gray for a blue, and it would be a great patriotic quilt, something that you could make for a veteran or a military person, or if you kind of like to decorate in red, white, and blue, it would be a terrific quilt for that as well.
It would. You could even switch it out to be more holiday and festive, too.
Right, exactly. The thing that we did with this quilt is Tonya likes to do needle turn applique. And so she did her stars in that technique. And so that's the technique that we show you how to do in the magazine. But we also know that some people can be a little intimidated by that. And so we decided to do the fusible web applique, and then where you machine applique it on. So it could be either by blanket stitch or a small zigzag or a satin stitch, kind of up to you, whatever your preferred method is. But we wanted to offer both of those options for people who like to do things in a different way.
Absolutely. I think that that really does open applique up to a lot more people too. You know, the needle turn can be a little intimidating, like you said, and more time consuming. And so to have that fusible option makes it a little quicker too for folks who want to, you know, get that project done quick before the holidays, maybe as a gift.
Right. Another image that you're going to be looking for on the cover is an adorable penguin pillow. And it is made with Shannon Fabrics Cuddle Fabric, which is a very plush, soft fabric, and the appliques are made with the cuddle plush, and then the backing is also using that. And so when you squeeze that pillow, it's just, again, something really soft and cuddly. And then the applique foundation is, it's kind of like a shot cotton, but it's a cotton solid that really makes those plush appliques pop off of there.
It really does. I think any kid would love to have that little penguin.
Yep, and that was designed by Myra Harder. The next project on the cover is a hexagon pincushion, and we have three different versions that we show you in the magazine, different ways that you can do that particular pincushion. And it was designed by Doris Brunett and Trina Kirkvold of Row House Creations. And we're also having a video on our website that shows you how to do some fussy cutting, and that's a technique that I think sometimes people, again, can be a little intimidated by. So the three versions of the pincushion, a couple of them show fussy cutting in a couple different ways. And then the third one, you don't have to do any fussy cutting. So if that's not something that you want to do, there's also an option for the pincushion without that. And we know the hexagon shape is really popular. It's one of my favorites. And so that's just another great project. I think that would be a terrific project to make in multiples for your sewing friends.
It would be. Well, and the fun part about this pincushion is that you really can personalize it for anybody with those fussy cut images or even with just fun fabric. It really can be, you know, special for someone.
And it's a little larger in size. And so you also could use it as kind of like a weight on if you're doing some cutting, maybe in some pattern pieces that need a little weight on top of it. That pincushion, in our particular version, we filled it with the crushed walnut shells, which gives the pincushion a lot of nice weight and heft to it.
It's wonderful.
And then our final project on the cover is some felt robot keychains, and we're calling them Geek Chic. We think that they're just really cute keychains designed by Kathleen Berlew. And we show two on the cover. There are actually three different versions in the magazine, and we show you how to cut those cute little felt shapes. They're embellished with snaps and some fun decorative stitching and some machine stitching. Definitely something that's a great hand project if you want to take and work on the go. But we think this is a really cute project, especially for probably, again, boys and maybe some guys that like that kind of thing. But we know a lot of girls like it as well.
Absolutely. I really think those are a fun addition to the issue.
So those are what you're looking for on the cover. And I guess, as I mentioned earlier, this is the time of year that many of us are starting to look at the holidays and look at gift giving. And we've got some terrific options in the magazine for projects that you might want to make for those specific occasions where you're doing gift giving. And it could be for a teacher. It could be for a sewing friend. It could be a family member, a secret Santa. We know there's lots of different opportunities for gift giving at this time of year.
Also in the issue, which, speaking of gift giving, we make it even easier for you to give those gifts. We've got some printable gift tags that are kind of sewing related or just really adorable, and they're on the editor's letter page on page one, actually. So you can download those from the internet. I think they're fun. We've got a spool-trunked Christmas tree with buttons as the tree. Just some really, really adorable little gift tags. So a good way to personalize your gift giving on the outside as well.
Yeah, and especially I think if you are more about the hand-making part of it, it's always fun to give the wrapping that's also a little unique and having kind of this unique gift tag or something that looks like it's a little more unique and not necessarily mass-produced, I guess I would say, I think is a great way to decorate your package as well.
And one of them even says specially handmade just for you, and I think that really tells that story to people. When, you know, when we go to the trouble to make somebody a handmade gift, we do it out of love, but we also, you know, kind of crave that attention of, hey, I made this for you.
Right, so, just recognizing that. And I think we've noticed that a lot in our industry is that people are very interested in personalizing the things that they make, kind of putting their own stamp on it, either from the point of them making it as the maker or also for the receiver and the person that they're giving it to and really taking the thought to what fabrics am I going to choose? Which embellishments am I going to use? And if you ask a lot of makers when they, you know, give something, they'll tell you that they did have a lot of thought that went into that.
Oh, yes. I don't think any of us just make a gift without really considering the recipient.
And I think as a person who's a maker and also loves to receive those handmade gifts, I really appreciate that too. And I appreciate the fact that somebody has taken the time to think about me and maybe what I like and maybe, you know, working outside the box that they normally do in terms of either a color palette or, because I know a lot of my friends, maybe they don't have the same color palette that they like to work in that I do, but they've taken the time to do it in the colors that they know I like or the fabrics that they know I like, and that really means a lot, I think.
It does.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about some of the projects that are in the magazine. As we mentioned, it's kind of that gift-giving time of year. And I think almost everything in the magazine could be considered a gift, don't you think?
I absolutely do.
We've got some terrific ideas for in the things that we love in terms of products and books and that kind of thing. So check that out. We also, in our regular column of Scrap Lab, for those of you who aren't familiar with it, we give the same set of materials to three different designers. And we have two contributing designers, Sherry Falls and Monique Dillard. And then we have a guest designer who's new every issue. And in this case, it was Barb Eichmeier. And Barb has designed a new line of fabric for Fabriquil. And that's the collection that was used this time for the three different projects. And we gave those to the designers. We gave them a stack of 42 5-inch squares and asked them to make a project based on that group of fabric. And so Sherry made a mini quilt. And Monique made a table topper. The instructions for those are in the magazine. And then Barb's bag, she made an adorable bag based on a mini log cabin block. And those instructions are actually free online. So if you go to our website at allpeoplequilt.com, and it's /205, allpeoplequilt.com/205, you can find the instructions for Barb's bag.
That's great. I love that bag. It's a wonderful log cabin project. Nice and tiny.
Right. And it is little blocks, which we all know I happen to love. So I particularly like that. And I just wanted to mention the fabric collection was the vintage shirting and dress prints circa 1880 to 1910. And again, that was by Barb for Paintbrush Studio and Fabriquilt.
It's such a fun line. It's got that old world charm to it. It almost feels, I don't know, bandana-ish, but it certainly has that that vintage feel, and I just really love that line.
How about when we come back in a couple minutes, we'll talk about some more projects in the magazine.
Sounds good. Thanks, Jody.
Looking for fresh, simple, and fun projects and ideas? Check out the current issue of Quilts & More magazine at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. To save time, Rotary cuts several layers of fabric at once. To prepare a stack for cutting, steam press one fabric, place the second fabric on top of it, and press again, repeating until you have stacked as many fabrics as you feel comfortable cutting at once. Ironing the fabrics together with steam helps them kind of cling to each other, resulting in more precise pieces.
Hi, I'm Linda Augsburg, Executive Editor of American Patchwork and Quilting, and I'd like to invite you to join me in making pillowcases and creating smiles. For people who love to sew or quilt, it's so easy to lift spirits and bring smiles to hospitalized kids, homeless families, and others in need. Simply join American Patchwork and Quilting Magazine's 1 Million Pillowcase Challenge. Make one, two, or more pillowcases and donate them in your local community. You'll create just as many smiles. Join the movement today. Find complete details, download free patterns, and record your donations online at allpeoplequilt.com/million pillowcases.
Take an ultimate shop hop tour of 11 top quilt shops. You'll find them all in the current issue of Quilt Sampler, available now at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
We're back now with Jody from Quilts & More magazine, and we're going to look at some of the other great projects that are in the winter issue of Quilts & More.
It's so much fun at the holiday season to be able to make those handmade gifts, which we talked about earlier. So we just kind of want to go through and give you an idea of some more projects that are in the winter issue of Quilts & More, and so you can be on the lookout for things that, as you're making your list of people that you want to make things for, maybe this will spark an interest, or maybe say, oh, that I remember them talking about that on the podcast, and I think I'm going to look up that pattern. So another pattern that we have, and this is for a little bit of a larger project. It's a quilt, but it's very doable. The pieces are pretty large. The blocks are easy to construct, and it's called Christmas Sweater, and it's made by Susan Emery of Swirly Girl Design. And the fabric is a Michael Miller collection called All the Trimmings. And it's has a white background, and so those holiday and Christmassy prints really pop off that white background, I think.
They really do. It almost feels like a holiday Argyle sweater.
Right. Reds and greens and kind of some novelty prints in there. So take a look at that. We have a great color option that our quilt tester, project tester, Jan Regaler made, too, in a totally different collection that's kind of seascape inspired. And so if you're not into Christmas and you don't want to make it Christmas, we like to show you different versions, knowing that the pattern itself is so versatile, it can be used in lots of different color combinations.
Now, Jody, you mentioned Jan Regaler and being your quilt tester. Tell me a little bit more about that.
Jan tests all of the projects that we publish in the magazine. We have several different steps and different people that work on the process, and one of the things that we do is have an actual sewer construct the quilt itself or the project itself. And so Jan's been involved in the business for many, many years. She owned a quilt shop. She's been a designer of quilts and projects, and she's been working with us the last couple, 3 years testing all of the things that we publish in Quilts and More. And so we feel so fortunate to have Jan because, again, she's somebody who can make quilts, but she also can make all different kinds of objects, whether it's pillows or bags or pin cushions or 3D objects. I send everything to her, and sometimes we have fabrics picked out ahead of time, and we call those the color options. So you see those in the magazine, but we test everything. So even though you don't see a color option in the magazine, it has been tested by Jan, and she tests those instructions that we write to make sure that they're accurate and that the pattern pieces actually work. And if they don't, we get that feedback from her, and we make sure that we get that fixed and taken care of before it's actually published. It's an invaluable resource for us.
It really sounds like it. I'm so glad that we have that ability to test those patterns and have somebody who can do it for us. I think it really does make things even more accurate, so that the sewer at the other end is not frustrated at all by the project.
And they can trust that it's been tested not only by the person who made the project, the person that wrote the instructions or edited the instructions. We've got an actual person making it. We also have a technical editor that just double checks all of the math as well. But I think having that actual person that's testing every step of the instructions that we've written for you is really vital and really important. And it makes our readers know that they can trust us with the instructions that they get.
Absolutely.
Another pillow that we have, we mentioned the penguin pillow at the big earlier segment. Another pillow we have it's called Redbird Roost, and it's by Jacqueline Steves. It's the thing I love about this pillow, it's red and white, which was one of my favorite color combinations. We know that's, you know, a really popular color combination now as well as in the holiday time, but it also combines embroidery with some English paper piecing and hexagons. And so it's just a really fun pillow where you can combine skills that you might have, or maybe learn a new skill that you didn't have before.
Well, and that makes it, both techniques are such great carry-along projects that if you're traveling for Thanksgiving or, you know, anytime, you can kind of have that with you and work on it as you need and get it done by the holidays.
Right. Another small quilt that we have in the issue is called Hues of Blues, and it's by Sherry McConnell, and it's the fourth in our series of mini quilts that Sherry has done for us over the issues this past year. For those of you who don't know, Quilts and More is set up on a quarterly system by the season, so we have spring, summer, fall, and winter, and each of those mini quilts was approximately the same size, within an inch or two of each other, and they also were kind of seasonally based. So if you want to decorate for a specific time of year, the quilts were developed so that you could hang one in spring, get the instructions for summer, work on that, and by the time summer got here, you could trade it out and put your summer one in that same spot all through the year. So this is the final version, or the final installment, I guess, of that mini quilt series from Sherry. And it's just a really cute blue and white. Again, we know that's a popular color combination both in the wintertime and anytime, really. It's just classic. And Sherry took some fabrics from the primitive Gatherings design collection for Moda, which is permanent snowmen. And that's just a super fun little snow ball block that Sherry has done. And we've also got a couple of color options that were made for that project as well.
Yeah, one of them is really very different, and I love being able to see some projects that, you know, even the shape of the block seems to change.
Right, even though the two colors were identical in one of the color options, we also used blue and white, but we just switched the positions of where the darks and the lights were located, and that really made the quilt just look totally different.
It really does.
We mentioned the hexagon pincushion earlier, and as I mentioned, we are going to have, or there is a video on allpeoplequilt.com that shows you how to do some of that fussy cutting. So if that's something that you're interested in learning a little more about, again, it's allpeoplequilt.com, and then it's backslash 210 or 210. So check that out if you want to know a little bit more about fussy cutting.
The next project in the issue is that So Easy Sampler. Now, we've been working on that all year long, and this is the fourth and final block.
Right. We have another, with this being the winter issue, we're kind of closing a couple things out that we've had throughout the year that we started with the spring issue. And this project was designed by Sandra Clemens, and Sandra took four different blocks and designed those with the Cotton Couture collection from Michael Miller Fabrics. And it's just a great color combination, really different, unique, and the blocks get a little more difficult. There also is some really nice machine quilting that Sandra did on the project. And we also have a couple of color options there. If the solids in that particular palette aren't something that interests you, you might want to do something in a more primary color collection with red and blue and yellow, or a more romantic collection that we did with pinks and mauves and mint green and chocolate brown, just to give you a different look depending on what your particular preferences in terms of colors. But again, we are concluding that project, and so you'll get instructions for the borders and adding the sashing pieces and putting those four blocks together.
Now, there's a snowman, and we all know I have a little penchant for snowmen, but there's a snowman pillow in this issue that I just can't get over.
It's really fun. It's about 17 inches tall, so it's pretty good size. It's a three-dimensional snowman pillow, and it was designed by Jennifer Heinen of Jennifer Jangles, and it's just a super cute project that has lots of embellishments. It has a scarf, and there's a carrot nose, and a really cute felt black hat with some little floral embellishments. So Jennifer, we know, does very whimsical designs, and so if you're familiar at all with her either beads, I know you were first introduced with her to her several years ago through her bead business.
Probably a decade ago, I've known Jennifer. She designed ceramic beads is kind of where she started, and then lo and behold, got this fabric line going, and I didn't know she was a quilter at the time, but, you know, I knew her as a beader. So it's fun to see her fabrics, her designs translated into fabric.
Right, and that was a collection that she designed for In the Beginning Fabrics. And again, she's known for her very whimsical, very colorful designs, and it's terrific for us to be able to have a project that we can feature from Jennifer. And we also have something a little different in this issue that we wanted to include. We know that the holiday times can be really busy for people, and you can get, you know, pull different directions sometimes. And so we included some really quick-to-make projects. So we have a coaster that's vinyl-covered, super simple to make, some holiday ornaments that you could make with just scraps of fabric, some votive candles that we embellished with some washi tape, and some clothespins that we took and added some scrapbooking paper and some little rhinestones and used some punches and decorated those up so that you could use either for your packaging or you could use them to hang recipes or photos. They are just really super fun, quick projects that you actually could do for any time, but they're especially cute, I think, as you're decorating for the holidays. And then we also have a special section on hosting a crafting party. And what do you want to do if you want to host a crafting party, but you're not really sure how to do that? So we've got a special section on that as well.
We also have some fun stockings in the issue, and then some embroidered towels, which I just love, that are also snowmen.
Right. Robin Kingsley of Bird Brain Designs designed a couple of new Snow Girl pillow or Snow Girl towels for us. They're tea towels to use in the kitchen. And Christine Chipperick designed our cute stockings. And we know that some people like to decorate in different color palettes at different times. And so those are some really cute stockings. I know you make holiday gifts sometimes for newlyweds. And so
I do. And I think stockings are a great addition.
And these were the Little Joys collection from Riley Blake Designs that Christine used in both her stockings and also a coordinating table runner that can be found in Make It Yourself magazine. So if you want to make both of those things, Make It Yourself is on newsstands now as well. So check that out. And then we have also another quilt from Sandra Clemens. In addition to the Sew Easy Sampler, we've got a quilt called The Crossing, and it's not a typical block quilt. It's actually put together in rows of squares and rectangles and showcases some really beautiful prints in some large size squares. So we know that the cross or plus motif is really popular right now, and that's what you probably see most of when you look at this quilt.
I love that there's 25 big blocks of fabric, 8.5-inch squares. I love it. It's such a great way to show off some of those bold prints that you have.
And then finally, on our last page, we have different ways of storing threads and floss. Sometimes we know that those things can just end up being a tangled mess, whether you've got embroidery floss or you've got threads, and how do you store them? And so we've got some ideas for you there on how to organize and store your floss.
The issue looks great, Jody. I'm so excited for people to be able to see it tomorrow because we've been working on it for quite a while.
Yep, we really are excited to have it concluded, and I'm really excited to start making some of these projects for gifts this year.
Me too. So be sure to look for the Quilts and More winter issue on newsstands October 27th. And of course, Pat will be back with you next week. So thanks for tuning in with us on this American Patchwork and Quilting podcast.
Remember to visit allpeoplequilt.com for more information on topics from today's show, as well as how-to videos, free printable patterns, and additional tips and techniques. Thanks for listening to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio.